The Sunday Grill on Beat 102, 103.
And my first guests this morning are Carlow women who have a positive story to tell about organ donation. Last week was Organ Donor Awareness Week, and both Amber O'Rourke and Anne-Marie Byrne have a joint story to tell, that one is the donor and the other the recipient. And Amber and Anne-Marie join me this morning to tell us more about this experience. You're both very welcome.
Thank you.
Good to talk to you both. Amber, we might start by talking to you. You're 16. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm 16. I'm in fourth year in school. And when I was 5, I had a stroke and I had kidney failure.
Wow.
So I was on dialysis for 5 years, I think, before I went on the donor list. And then I had my transplant in 2017. So my life has been going good since then, and I'm still able to go to school. I got back from Italy last night, so
Brilliant.
I'm doing really well since I had my transplant.
And how was life pre-transplant? What were you not able to do?
So I wouldn't be able to go see my friends a lot, and I'd be missing a lot of school because I'd have an awful lot of hospital appointments. I used to be in the hospital 3 days a week up in Dublin.
Were you on dialysis?
Yeah, I was. So I was on dialysis in the nighttime for 12 hours every night. So I'd have to stay in bed for the 12 hours and go to bed earlier if I was able to go to school, so that I could get up early for school.
Okay, wow. And that really, like being 4, you know, it's probably all you knew, was it, being sick up until 2017?
Yeah, it really was. It was a big shock as well because I didn't really understand what was going on because I was so young.
And what do you mean it was a big shock when you got the kidney, or what do you mean?
Yeah, I didn't really expect to get a kidney that fast because a lot of people are waiting nearly 10 years or 7 years for a transplant. Mm. So I was really shocked when Anne-Marie said that she was a match.
Wow. And when you say your life changed, that must have been a bit of a shock as well, to go from only knowing one way of life to suddenly being able to do everything that your friends could do.
Yeah, it was a really good change. I suppose I got the best chance of life that I could get once I got my kidney. I was able to eat whatever I wanted and drink whatever I wanted and be able to go places with my friends again and do things that I really wasn't able to do up until I got my transplant because I had to be so careful.
Yeah, I remember making a documentary about someone who was on the kidney transplant list, and it was astounding to hear the things that she couldn't do, like the amount of water, you know, that you drink and the sort of foods you have to watch out for. And like, she was in her 30s. It must have been so hard to be a kid and have to live like that.
Yeah, we had to be so careful. I was only allowed to drink 700 mils of water a day.
Wow.
So, and I wasn't able to eat chocolate or takeaways or sweets or anything.
No, you don't know yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Italy must have been a joy with all that food then.
Yeah, it was so fun. Oh, I was able to eat everything.
Oh, how brilliant. And, you know, it's the little things like that that really make life too. And Anne-Marie is here because she is your donor and she's also a family friend. And Anne-Marie, I'm sure people tell you all the time what a gift that is to give someone, but what motivated you to do that?
I suppose seeing Amber and seeing how hard her life was, and watching all the restrictions she had, and knowing that I could live healthily with one kidney. Mm. So I was happy to do it.
And were you a number of people who went to see if you were the match, or was it that you were one of the few people who wasn't in her family?
Well, I think there was another person that had gone forward, and he just wasn't successful or whatever with the testing.
People are amazing.
But we were just lucky that everything went really straightforward and it was all such a success.
And you're what's called, obviously, a live donor. So
a living donor.
A living donor. So what was the process like for you then?
So when I first contacted the hospital, it was in January of 2017, and they told me that it could be up to a year before the transplant could go ahead because there's so much rigorous tests. So it was like visits to the hospital every few weeks, blood tests, tissue tests, then just to be sure that my body was healthy enough to go through the surgery and to live with one kidney, that both of the kidneys were really strong. So there were so many tests that I had to have done. They had to be sure that it was going to work. So then we had the surgery in August, and it was all really straightforward.
And it was a straightforward surgery for you, was it, as well?
Yeah, I was in Beaumont Hospital and Amber was in Temple Street. Mm-hmm. So they removed my kidney in Beaumont and transported it across to Temple Street to be transplanted into Amber.
Wow. And your recovery was fine and...
Yeah, like it did take a few weeks, but I was fine. I didn't have any setbacks or any hiccups at all. We were very lucky. We were blessed.
And that was nearly 7 years ago now. And it's such a positive story. And, you know, we hear so many positive stories about organ donation, but we do hear about stories where it doesn't work out for people. And is it your niece, her brother?
My nephew, sadly.
Oh, he's your nephew.
Yeah, my nephew, Kevin, in September of last year, he sadly passed away on the transplant list, waiting for a heart transplant. And he just didn't, he wasn't lucky, one of the lucky ones to receive the transplant.
Wow.
He was only 34, young man, with all his whole life ahead of him.
Yeah.
So that was, we have seen the success story and the devastating other story
as well. Of course. And it's an unusual thing in one way to need an organ donor. And you've experienced both sides of it now.
Yeah. And that's why it's so important to raise awareness of organ donation and to just make sure people have the chats with their family and let them know their wishes.
Mm-hmm. And how are the two of you now, Amber and Anne-Marie? You're great pals, are you?
Oh, yeah. We're good old buddies, like, and we're both flying.
Yeah. So both flying, which is brilliant to hear.
Yeah, and it's great to see Amber so healthy.
I'd say so. It's great to see her being able to do all the things that you do when you're in secondary school as well.
Yeah, she's brilliant.
Yeah, it's great to hear. What would you say to people who, you know, the human tissue bill will change how you become an organ donor in Ireland? It'll create that opt-out system that we hear a lot about for organ donation. So it means that you register to say you do not want to be an organ donor. And if you don't do that, you become an organ donor after you die if your organs can be used. But right now, you either have to have it on your app or you have to have it on your driver's license. What would you say to people who don't even think about it? It's not even a yes or no. It's that they don't think about it. What would you say, Amber, to people?
I suppose you really have to think about people that aren't as lucky. Like people that do need a transplant, if you are a donor, you give people a second chance at life and a second chance of getting the best life they can. And if you can give someone a good chance at life, it's really something you should think about, because some people aren't as lucky, because not many people are stepping forward to become a donor.
And what about you then, Anne-Marie, who gave one of your kidneys to Amber? What would you say to people?
I would just say have the conversation with your family and make them aware of your wishes, because it's no use to have it carry your donor card unless your next of kin know that it's your decision, not theirs. That make sure that they know and they're definite that you want to be a donor.
And when you were going through the process, Anne-Marie, like, did you have kids of your own at that stage? Like, were there people that you had to consider when you were going for that surgery and for those tests?
Yeah, well, I had to have the discussion with them and make sure everybody was on board. I have two boys. They're 25 and 18 now.
And my husband. And
they were teenagers. And they were worried. Of course, they were worried. But we explained everything and they knew that I was in safe hands and they knew how beneficial it was going to be to Amber. Yeah. So it was all good.
Well, a lovely story. And, you know, some great to have a great news story as well from just a week out of Organ Donor Awareness Week, which was last week. And that is Amber and Anne-Marie. They are both based in Carlow. And if you are interested or you want to get more details on how to get an organ donor card, you can go onto the Irish Kidney Association website. That's ika.ie. They're also in doctor's surgeries and pharmacies. And you can also look all that up online as well. And as you were both saying, you should tell your family or next of kin that you consent to donating your organs after your death.
Absolutely.
Hard conversation to have. It's a bit like when people say you should make a will. Sometimes people feel like they're tempting fate or something, don't they?
Yeah, but it's so important.
So important. Well, listen, Thank you so much for talking to me this morning on the Sunday Grill, Amber and Anne-Marie. And Amber, enjoy all those travels that your teens and your 20s mean, you know, all the things that you're going to do thanks to having that kidney donated by Anne-Marie. And thanks a million for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
The Sunday Grill on
Beat 102-103. It's the Sunday Grill here on Beat 102-103. Let's do this.
Music to my ears.
Oh, not my ears. Oh, they've jazzed it up.
Yeah, it's a jazzy version for your
show.
Oh,
okay, they haven't jazzed it up.
No.
Oh, disappointing. Well,
it's Eurovision week.
Yeah, and for many diehards, the month of May.
It's gay Christmas.
Gay Christmas, aka Eurovision. And one of those diehards, as you can hear, is Niall Power. And he's going to chat to me about the highs and lows of the Eurovision Song Contest as it prepares for its 68th year. Yeah. This year it's in Malmo in Sweden. It has greater security and controversy than ever. Will we talk about that quickly and then move on to the, you know, the usual Eurovision stuff? This is about Israel's entry. And do you know what? I actually think I will end up watching the Eurovision just to see what people in the audience reaction is to Israel this year.
Yeah, okay. Let's get that out of the way first. There's a sour taste this year for the Eurovision. And there's a lot of people kind of puzzled as to what's the best way. Should they boycott it? What's the best way to handle it? Obviously, since the outbreak of the Israel-Hamas war back in October, calls were made for Israel to be excluded from the contest on the grounds of the humanitarian crisis resulting from military operations in the Gaza Strip. And we know that. We've seen the awful news every single day. So a lot of protests, a lot of petitions directed at the national broadcasters, putting pressure on the European Broadcasting Union. They did nothing about it. And then
they said nothing even.
They eventually issue a statement because of the attack on the contestants. But speaking of the contestants, at the end of March, several entrants, including Bambi Tug from Ireland, Ollie Alexander from the UK and numerous others, released a joint statement calling for an immediate and lasting ceasefire in Gaza, as well as the return of the Israeli hostages held by Hamas.
Yeah, okay.
Now, the artists have been absolutely attacked and lambasted on social media and everywhere that they should be pulling out. And it's been really unfair on them, because at the end of the day, these artists have contracts with broadcasters, with record labels that they're really locked into, and it would ultimately destroy their career.
Of course, yeah.
And the anger, if there's anger out there, should have been directed at the broadcasters like RT and the BBC. Mm-hmm. Because a few years back, I can't remember what year it was during the pandemic, but it was the broadcasters put pressure to get Russia out of it and said, we will not take part. But this time there's been a bit of silence on it, and that's why there's been a lot of, you know, I suppose, confusion as to how people should handle it. I watched Ollie Alexander at some of the pre-shows they do around Europe, and he looks like a broken man, and I feel so sorry for him, because this should be his dream, Eurovision. And he's in, you know, between the rock and the hard place as to what to do. Some people will watch it, some people will boycott it. I've seen some other clever things, like Mark Graham from Waterford has been very active online, and he has made clear that if you advertise on RTE during the ad breaks, he'll be publishing the list of advertisers afterwards.
Okay.
So that's quite a clever way, I suppose, of maybe making a point.
Yeah.
But it is, as I said, a little bit tinged with sadness this year, the Eurovision. And I totally understand anybody who says, you know, this year I'm giving it a miss because it's going to be very hard to watch. But on a happier note, the Eurovision, it is three shows, as it is nowadays, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday.
And will you do all of those?
I'll try my best, if I'm around.
What is it, Niall? Why'd you love it?
Do you know what it is? Well, initially, I suppose, as a kid growing up, it's music, it's camp, it's over the top.
Yeah, I remember setting my tape deck for it even to record some of the songs.
Yeah, and I remember, like, it's always the kind of the start of summer as well. Yeah. You're becoming close to the school holidays. There's a patriotism in, you want your country to do well. What's changed over the last 10 or 15 years, and I keep telling people this and they don't believe me, but the quality of the songs has actually got really better. Countries want to win this now.
Yeah,
and they put in decent songs.
Yeah.
It's not all shalalalalay, ding-a-ling-a-ling, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it makes stars. We saw that last year.
Well, one of the big examples of that in the last few years is Måneskin, who have gone on to Coachella and all over the world.
Yeah, and it actually took me a while for that to realise in my head that they are Eurovision entries for Italy, wasn't it?
Now, as you said, we're back in Malmö in Sweden this year because of Loreen last year, who won it for the second time, and what a tune that was. Two semis and the grand final. 37 countries this year participating in the contest. Luxembourg are back after 31 years.
Wow.
Welcome back, Luxembourg. They were last in it in 1993. But I suppose you'll want to know about Ireland.
Yeah, tell us.
Yeah, I mean, what do we say about Ireland? Ireland has not had a great few years.
No. And we used to be, look, the masters at this.
I know. We are still reigning champions joint with Sweden for most wins with 7. We haven't qualified for the final since Ryan O'Shaughnessy in 2018. We haven't reached the top 5 since Mark Roberts' Mysterious Woman in 1997. And we last made it into the top 10 in 2011 when Jedward sang Lipstick. So we have to do something here. Mm. What we're doing doesn't work. And so this year, Ireland's entry is 31-year-old Bambi Tug, who's from Macroom in Cork. And the artists will perform their entry, Doomsday Blues, fourth in the first semi-final. Bambi Tug is very much a performance artist.
Yeah, you wouldn't see them going down the streets of Macroom in County Cork in the outfit that they wear.
And I think grannies will be scared when they see the performance. But as I said, we have to do something different.
And is this about copying the winners, you know, past winners?
I don't know if there's been a winner like this, to be honest with you. But I'll tell you what I can tell you. Currently, as we sit here this morning with the bookies, it's 9th favourite to win.
That's great.
So there is some hope that at least we get out of the semi. And that's what I think a lot of people would do.
Will we have a listen?
Let's have a little clip.
That is the first time I've heard that.
Okay.
Is that not terrible? Should that not be something that's in my head now?
I don't know. There's mixed opinion on it. I think a lot of this is going to come down to the performance because they are very visual and we'll see how they get on. As I said, all we want to do is qualify and be involved on the final on the Saturday night. Mm-hmm.
Now, can we talk about Ollie?
Ollie!
Can I just say that, and maybe I'm wrong with this, correct me, the UK like to take people to the Eurovision that are quite well known. They've had Blue in the past.
Yeah, they've had Engelbert Humperdinck, Bonnie Tyler.
What was the one with the sunshine? She won the Eurovision. Remember that one?
Katrina and the Waves.
Yeah. You knew what I meant. I know.
The sunshine woman. Yeah, they do. They've tried to take it seriously last year with some decent artists. Mm. And so this year, Ollie Alexander of Years and Years.
Yeah.
I've seen him live before. Amazing pop
he's
star.
Brilliant.
And does it really well. And I quite like this 80s vibe. It's called Dizzy. To make me dizzy.
Yeah, lovely. Now, can I say something controversial?
Go on.
I see this as a bit of a step back for Ollie's career, but you think this would be a step forward.
Yeah, I mean, Ollie doesn't really need to prove himself because he's been such
he's an actor,
a brilliant musician, actor, pop star and all that kind of stuff. And I'd imagine young gay boy's dream is to do the Eurovision at some point. So this is his year coming through.
So this is his iconic year.
So the last one I'm going to play is the favourite right now. And this is Switzerland. And it's a kind of mix of rap and pop and a little bit of
operatic.
And
did Switzerland do well? Or?
No, I can't remember Switzerland in my lifetime winning. So it's a long time since they've won. So they're favourites currently. And this is their song.
Okay, let's have a listen. That's very Eurovision-y.
Very European. Yeah, yeah. You're singing it already, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We'll see. Again, it's a mix between the jury vote and the public televotes and Tuesday and Thursday, the semis with the final next Saturday night. So strap yourselves in, everybody.
Yeah, of course. Are you going to be a Marty or going to be a Graham?
Oh, I find that hard every year because I love them both for different reasons.
I think Marty is just verges on the other side of cynical and I love that.
Yeah, I'd probably flick between the two, to be fair.
Okay, well, RTÉ 1 or BBC 1 from 8 p.m. on Tuesday, May 7th, Thursday, May 9th, and then the big one, of course, on the Saturday night. Thanks a million, Niall.
No bother. The Sunday Grill on
Beat 102-103. Across the southeast, it is Beat 102 and 103, and let's head to County Wexford because it's the last day of Enniscorthy's Rockin' Food Festival, and it certainly is rockin'. Amanda Whitmore is the woman with all the details, and she's here to talk us through what's expected on the final day of the Rockin' Food and Fruit Festival. We have to get the fruit in there, don't we?
You do.
The strawberries. Now, you're very welcome and welcome back to the Sunday Grill. We've chatted
to you
before about the Rockin' Food Festival, but it's always on like August kind of time, but the flowers, everyone's thinking about the flower, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose we were there thinking you don't want to clash with the flower. I mean, the flower is just a huge event that everybody wants to be a part of. And plus we rely so heavily on Wexford County Council as well and their resources and everything, so they'll be really busy in August. So yeah, we took the decision to move to the Maybank holiday weekend, and yeah, so far everybody seems to be happy about it. It's nice to have some events kind of in the off season as well.
It's almost kicking off the summertime as well. And
it is.
If you're living under the rock, when we say Fla, we mean the Fla Ceoil, of course, is coming to County Wexford in August. So we have moved the Rock and Food Festival to May Bank Holiday. And today is the last day. You always have so much going on, even to read, you've 70 vendors. Is that right?
Yeah, we have. There's a brilliant selection of vendors this year, even more than last year. Like last year was really busy, but we've got lots of new vendors this year. I think even probably because of the change of date, it just suited people a little bit better. So yeah, there's about 70 food vendors. There's tastes and flavors from all over the world, and then of course our own as well. So we've got a lot of stalls from the Wexford food family, showcasing the best of the Wexford produce as well.
Good stuff. And you have lots of events today on the final day, kicking off at about 12 o'clock. You're going to have talk all about meat. You're going to have the Junior Bake Off, loads going on. Tell us a bit about this today. Yeah, and the Devil's Menu as well, who I'm hearing lots about recently.
Oh, yeah, he's great. So yeah, in the food marquee is brilliant. It's located just at the top of Rafter Street. And there's a really good lineup today. So Alan Kennedy from Kennedy's Craft Butchers in Buntlody in Enniscorthy. So Alan is very, very passionate craft butcher, and he will be talking all about getting the right cut of meat and how to get the best really from your local butcher, and really with an emphasis on locally source beef and meat. Then we've got Shane Smith, who people will know from the Today Show, and he'll be judging all the local. We've a teen and a junior bake off.
Okay.
Yeah, if the little ones are at home this morning, they have a little bit of time to enter if they want to.
Oh, you can
most
still
create
enter.
A cookie.
Oh, okay.
They still can. Yeah. So just get your entries into the food marquee by 12:50 today.
Okay, so it's the most creative cookie. Do you come with the cookies?
Most creative cookie.
And then
you show
them
off. They need to have four cookies.
Oh.
Exactly. They need to have four cookies, three for tasting and one then for display.
Okay. And I must call my house. I have a very competitive 8-year-old.
Yeah, there you go. And all the details are on the website for that anyway.
Okay, good stuff. So that is on from 1 to 2 o'clock in the marquee as well. And lots of other stuff.
Yeah.
Tell us about the Devil's Menu for people who might know about this.
Well, if you want a great demo, he's putting a real twist on some strawberries, cooking them with red wine and Meadowfield Farm goat's cheese. So again, all local products. But John Whelan is very, very entertaining, and it'll be devilishly fun, I would say. So that's one not to miss. And then Wexford FC are on after him. They're going to close the day out. So they have some surprise guests. I don't even know who they are myself, coming in for a bake-off as well. So for the soccer fans, that'll be one to come in for.
Good stuff. Sounds great. And lots of other family activities happening today as well. Is that right?
Yeah, there's loads, and they're all on the website. There's still a little bit of availability in some of them. So just have a look on the website. There's discos, fairy castle making, slime, all puppet show, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Brilliant. So that's rockandfoodfestival.ie.
I'm right
in thinking, because when I was growing up, it was all about the strawberry fair. So this is like a new strawberry fair, is it, in Enniscorthy?
Yeah, I mean, the strawberry, this would have ran alongside the strawberry fair for a couple of years, but the strawberry fair finished, I don't know when, it was probably maybe four or five years ago was the last strawberry fair. Yeah, so the Rock and Food Festival is now, but look, it's similar. Now, we don't have as many strawberry growers this year because we're a little bit early.
Yeah.
So normally August, like, you'd have Wheelocks and Green Hills and all that. They'd be out with all their strawberries and this. But unfortunately, it's too early this year at the Maybank Holiday.
Yeah. And do you think that you'll keep on this stage then if it works out? Or is August a great time for you usually?
Yeah, we'll see how it goes and we'll get some feedback from everybody. You know, August, obviously, there's a lot of people in Wexford on holidays anyway. But I suppose that the ideal thing is to boost times that are traditionally quieter as well for the local economy and to try and attract tourists down for that. So, yeah, we'll see now after this. But definitely, I'd say for this year and next year anyway, it'll be May.
Okay, good stuff. Well, it is the Enniscorthy Rockin' Food Festival. Rockinfoodfestival.ie is the website if you want to check out details for today, the final day of the festival. I'm off to ring home to Gorey to get someone to get ready for the Cookie Junior Bake Off competition. You'll see a very competitive 8-year-old there in about an hour's time. Amanda, thank you so much for talking to me about the Rockin' Food Festival.
Thank you, Orla. Best of luck
with today. Thanks a million.
The Sunday Grill on Beat 102-103.
Across the southeast on a Sunday morning, it is Beat 102-103 on a bank holiday Sunday morning, no less. And we talked to the creators of the When Next We Meet Festival last year. And this June bank holiday, the Clonmel Music Festival returns for its third season with some changes, some movements and some hidden gems too. One half of the crew behind When Next We Meet, that is Kate Tuhig, joins me this morning to tell us more. Welcome back to the Sunday Grill, Kate.
Hi, Orla. Thanks for having us back. How are things?
Oh, all good here. It's lovely that you... I think the last time we talked, we were still a little bit in the dregs of COVID and kind of thinking about what you could do and what you couldn't do. So you've free rein. All that can get into your... in the way of you is actually rain and the bad weather. So fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed for that.
Yeah. So what, four weeks to go now?
Yeah, we have 4 weeks to go now and we're just banking on that leaving cert weather to kick in around the time of our festival. So keep those fingers crossed.
Everything crossed for you. And you know, your festival is regularly advertised in County Wexford and beyond, thanks to my boyfriend, Donna, because you gave us gave me even a When Next We Meet Festival t-shirt, which she has nabbed and is wearing everywhere. It's been to Croatia even. So a lovely deep green t-shirt. So he's wearing it well.
Well, thank you so much to him for helping get the word out there in Wexford. It's great to know.
And it has a lovely, like the title is lovely of it, When Next We Meet. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we were, I suppose, racking our brains trying to come up with a name that, I suppose, gave across kind of the ethos behind our festival. And we were all coming out of COVID at the time, Orla, you know, so we were desperate to meet up with people and... yeah, it just kind of sprung. Owen, who's my other half and partner in crime on the festival as well, kind of just came up with the name. And we all just had that light bulb moment sitting around the table going, oh, that has a ring to it.
Yeah, it's lovely.
It's lovely. Yeah, so we've got great graphic designers then that worked on the logo. And we've been flogging that out on t-shirts and tote bags around the country
really
since.
Yeah. And how would you describe the festival to people?
It's a small scale, I suppose, festival with a big heart, you know. It's artist led. So what we're trying to do is, there's so many fantastic festivals, but that might be more commercially led around the country. And ours is very much about bringing artists and audiences together in a very special space and just creating like really memorable experiences. We've got 2 years under the belt now where it's proven to have been that, thankfully. Audiences are coming back year on year and artists are now, you know, hearing about it and hoping to actually get a slot at the festival and play. So, it's a lovely vibe there. There's never any hassle from the crowd. People genuinely are music fans that come to the festival.
And a good location as well, isn't it?
It's fabulous. I mean, Raheen House Hotel, the gardens are stunning there. I don't know if you've ever been yourselves, but it's beautiful there. And it's a 2-minute walk from Clonmel Town Centre, you know, so it's right there. But you wouldn't know that you were in Clonmel either. You know, once you kind of step into the gardens, You're surrounded by trees. You're surrounded by all of these nooks and crannies. And it's perfect for the kind of festival we put on.
And do you have camping there? Or do people stay in the town? How does it work usually?
Yeah, so there's accommodation in the town, which we have a list up on our FAQ section on the website. So we're not a camping festival yet. It's something that we're trying to build an audience really for alternative Irish music in the area. And that is, it's coming around and it's happening. And it's not off the cards that down the line we won't, you know, turn towards camping. But at the moment, there's accommodation available by many, like various budgets. It would suit, you know, between 4-star hotels and down to hostels. So and check out the FAQs.
There's something, I've been to like festivals in Europe where they're kind of city festivals. There's something lovely about having the option of a town as well, you know, not just being in a campsite and trying to entertain yourselves, you know?
Completely. And like, I'm only in my early 30s, but I think I'm already kind of a little bit past the like, I'm needing the comfort of a bed and a shower, you know?
You don't want to have to walk a long distance to your toilet in the middle of the night, really.
No, you really don't. I think I did enough of that now in my late teens and 20s.
Mm-hmm. Me too. So you've made a few changes, a few movements. Tell us what you've done this year.
So anyone that's been to the festival previously will know the walled garden that's in Raheen House, and that's been the setting for our main stage over the last 2 years, where we've had then a smaller acoustic stage for local artists to present their music in a side garden. Now, this year, we're upping our capacity from 400 a night to 600 a night. So in order to do that safely, we have moved the main stage into a bigger area in the gardens. And we're putting, for the local artist stage, we've thankfully received some generous funding from Credit Union here in Clonmel and the Tipperary Museum of Hidden History, where we're able to present, rather than an acoustic stage for the local artists, they can now perform their music, you know, authentically as they want to present it. So, you know, we can accommodate full bands. We do still have some acoustic acts as well. You know, whatever the artists want, whatever way they want to present the music themselves, we can now accommodate that. So that'll be under a lovely stretch tent in that walled garden space. So on the off chance that there is a little sprinkle of rain, you know, we do have some covered areas now, whereas in previous years we've been handing out, you know, free ponchos to everyone, but hopefully we won't require either of those this year.
Good stuff. And have you some confirmed acts already with, what, 5 weeks in?
We have, thankfully, yes. So we've got a really lovely lineup of artists this year. So we're on the 1st and 2nd of June. So it's a Saturday, Sunday of the bank holiday weekend. The first night we have folk act Ye Vagabonds are headlining the main stage. Mm. Susan O'Neill is playing before them.
Oh,
and
brilliant.
She's fantastic. And Tipperary artist Cormac Luby, who was on with Ava last weekend.
Oh, great,
On Irish chatting. Beats. So, yes, on Irish Beats. So he's opening the main stage. But prior to that, we've got a host of local artists and DJs playing on the Hidden Gem stage under that stretch tent.
Lovely stuff.
So that's the Saturday night. And then Sunday, we're gearing up for Bellex One to headline the main stage.
Brilliant.
There. I know there's great excitement around it now. You know, it's rare that artists of that size kind of come to regional towns, you know. So, yeah, there's a great buzz around that. Rachel Lavelle is playing before Bellex One. And then we have another Tipperary native, The Line, who is Brian Dillon. And he's going to be opening the main stage. And prior to that, again, a host of local acts are playing on the Hidden Gem stage, like Rory De Lester, Shawnee Birmingham, The Wood of O, and Eve Whelan. And then when all of that music wraps up, we have an after party in the hotel itself.
Nice.
So we've got some DJs playing there. So yeah, we think we've got everything covered in terms of just throwing a really like great party. Yeah,
okay.
Hopefully.
Brilliant stuff. Well, that is over the June bank holiday, as you said. But the best place for you to go right now, if you want to check out more details, is whenwenextmeet.ie. It's in Raheen House Hotel in Clonmel in County Tipperary, 2 minutes from the town. So you don't have to be all festively in your wellies all weekend. If you don't want to be. A brilliant lineup, and you've some lovely videos up on your website as well of what it was like last year, and it just looks so lovely. So best of luck with everything.
Oh, thank you, Orla.
Thanks a million for talking to me this morning.
Thank you so much.
The Sunday Grill on Beat 102-103.
across the southeast. It is Beat 102 and 103. And you can kind of guarantee that a movie is going to be quality when it has A24 behind it. And Civil War is its most expensive movie yet. It's a dystopian future America. A team of military embedded journalists race against time to reach Washington, D.C. before rebel factions descend upon the White House. It's directed by Alex Garland. He's the man who brought us Ex Machina and The Beach, which really was the movie of the noughties. I can remember, like, even, what, sorry?
28 Days Later as well.
And that. Yeah, I did not know that. That's Brian, of course.
Hello.
Civil War stars Kirsten Dunst. Who else is in it?
So it's Wagner Moura. So I was like, I recognise him from somewhere. He was Pablo Escobar in Narcos.
Ah, okay.
I was like, and then Kaylee Spaney, who was in Priscilla a few weeks ago.
Okay.
Nick Offerman is in there as well. And then it's kind of, they're the kind of the main ones. And then I can't find it. Oh, Stephen McKinley Henderson.
Okay, so really Kirsten Dunst.
It's a road trip movie. So there's only like four characters in it. Nick Offerman is just the, like, he's not in it much. It's literally just the main kind of four.
Well, I hope this clip then will kind of give people an idea of what it is.
Yeah.
But it might be quite doubtful because it really is the big crescendo to Civil War in action. Have a listen. It reminds me of, remember when you were school and they told you about the War of the Worlds radio play that was played like in the 20s and people thought it was actually happening in real life? This is a bit of this going on, doesn't it? Yeah, let's have a listen.
Citizens of America, the so-called Western forces of Texas and California have suffered a very great defeat at the hands of the United States military.
Mr. President, do you regret the use of airstrikes against American citizens?
We're moving to D.C. today.
We need to go down there.
They shoot journalists on sight in the Capitol.
Every instinct in me says this is death.
What if...
Every time I survived the war zone, I thought I was sending a warning home. Don't do this. But here we are.
There's some kind of misunderstanding here.
What?
Well, you're American, okay?
Okay. What kind of American are you? You don't know?
What kind of American are you? Why did I ask that?
That is probably the most tense scene. Actually, there's a lot of tense scenes in it. I think about it. I was going to say the most. It probably is the most tense scene in the entire movie, and I'm absolutely not going to say anything about it because it's absolute spoilers if I say anything, but it's mad because it feels like such a different movie. Like, as much as it's Civil War, like, it's an action epic and a road trip movie.
Okay.
Which is,
yeah, I find it bizarre hilarious to hear you say road trip movie, because when I watched all the clips that I watched, I was like, really?
Yeah, it's literally all about the driving from one place to another, going through the different towns and stuff.
Is it very of its time? Because even in one clip, someone says, you know, there's a civil war happening, and they say, well, we kind of keep ourselves to ourselves, which is an awful lot of the narrative that we hear these days. You either keep yourself to yourself or you're thoroughly involved in social media mania.
So basically the premise of it is there's a civil war happening in America and it's like there's a Texan Californian army thing, and then there's like a Floridian, I suppose is the term.
Yeah, it would be.
Florida people, army.
Florida
has gotten, like, they're keeping low. But I have a good feeling about it. But I don't know any more of his songs. But they basically, Nick Offerman is the president, and he's doing a speech, being like, "Okay, we've gotten them." But then the whole thing is, they want, like, so Kirsten Dunst and Wagner Moura want to get to the Washington D.C. To the White House to get to the president before anybody else does.
For sayonara, president,
to like get the final interview with him. Essentially.
Oh, okay.
And it's
okay,
like before he gets, and it's just like. So this movie was actually, like, I actually watched a lot of behind the scenes of how it was shot, which is weird because normally it's just like cameras. It's like, oh, we use the best cameras in the world. They actually don't.
Okay.
So they want this to look like a journalist. So it's a lot of handheld cameras. It's like a special rig and stuff they made for this camera to use it.
Okay.
And it's all very handheld, and it has a different feel to other movies. Like, you know, and it is, A24's most expensive movie they've ever done. So
okay.
It's just it's a proper just, like, from the very start, I'm like, I'm so glad I saw this in the cinema, because just they do a thing, like, it's not even anything to do with the movie. It's just like with the A24 logo at the start, and they just play a sound, but it comes from the different speakers in the cinema.
Oh, okay.
And it's like around you, and you're like, I'm in. I'm so in because they care. Like they care about the experience that you're having. Like, you know, they understand.
And
it
is such a cinema movie.
It,
like
it really
needs to
was,
be seen
yeah.
in the cinema. When you were just saying they're handheld, I was just trying to think of a movie, and Cloverfield is what I was thinking of from years ago, and it has that kind of a end of times but kind of feel to it.
It has a like because it's not a cinema camera as such. It's more kind of a like kind of the in between of like. Do you mean a like a not exactly the highest tier of camera? Let's say. That it's like an actual camera that people, a normal person could afford.
Okay.
It does feel like you're kind of more in it, you know? It does feel more immersive. And I suppose as someone that spends so much of their time watching like videos on YouTube and stuff where it's just like, just cameras and it's like real people kind of a thing.
And explain A24 to people who might know about it because they've such an eclectic mix. You know, there was a movie called Tuesday, which looked so bizarre. I think it's out in the States and then it's coming soon here. But there's not much talk of it. Like they just suddenly arrive on the scene, these A24 movies, I almost feel.
Yeah.
They don't go for the massive marketing that we might expect from other movies.
See, they do this fantastic thing where they make fantastic movies and almost leave them speak for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like obviously they do the press run. They do like they don't do like zero marketing or whatever. But they rely on the product to be good, and it's like over the last couple of years, they have become such a strong like.
They've become a genre in themselves, almost. I find if you hear A24, like I said at the start,
it's more experimental.
Quality,
it's giving people that don't fit into any of the other studios a chance. Like if you think about the like maybe the last like 10 years, two of the biggest like well, apart from like all the streamers, like because obviously Prime and Netflix, like as much as they're like. They're going up in price. They are making some good stuff. Like Fallout on Prime was insane. But like A24 are probably the movie studio that's really just, I don't know, would you say it's kind of like the millennial movie studio? Really?
Because
it's giving first chances to people.
So and we have like Lady Bird and The Whale is from A24.
Everything Everywhere All at Once was A24. Like these are some of the most like, the most interesting movies the last couple of years. The most like
Midsummer, like things like that.
They're just crazy. Like,
yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
But it also, like, they kind of, it's kind of always kind of dark, but like realistic, if that makes sense. If that's their kind of their vibe. But they just make such good movies. Like Uncut Gems was them as well. Like, like even the show Euphoria was them. And like, it's just, I don't know, it's just, it's a different thing. You know, if you're watching A24, it's not going to be.
And it almost has a genre in itself, but at the same time, they're all standalone movies, all standalone TV shows, but they have that A24 feeling. Is that what we would say? Yeah. And Civil War, would you say, like the most expensive, would you say that it goes a step above the Midsummers and the Ladybirds? And
yeah, so like because...
Like it's a sci-fi in a way, is it? Or action?
It is an action. Like there's some like really intense like fight scenes, but it's like because so basically everyone that you're kind of based around is press, which it was interesting to see how like dedicated they were to the cause, let's say.
Okay,
but they were just photographers trying to capture it, and like they are in the thick of it, and it's interesting to see like them kind of on both sides, like neither the kind of army or the kind of militias and stuff. None of them attack them because like there's nothing wrong with the press. They're capturing the story. Like no one has any beef with them. So it's, they kind of are just kind of let in wherever. And it's always, I think that's quite interesting because normally you're like, oh, these are the good guys. These are the bad guys. Like, no, they're all kind of like fine. And that, I don't know, there's some like funny moments as well, but it's also like quite intense because you might be like, okay, we're fine now. And then suddenly it's like, oh God, your heart sinks. Like something happens. There's a person gone missing. It's just,
okay.
It's just like,
I'm going to go for it.
You're in. I think, or like you
about
would,
6 months time.
I think you would quite enjoy it. I genuinely do. I think.
No, I think I will. Watching the clips, I was like, oh, this is a bit of me. And I love A24 movies. Yeah. I see there's a thread on Reddit called What's the Most Normal A24 Film? And I think that sums it up just a bit, you know?
Probably Lady Bird, to be fair.
Yeah, probably.
But yeah, the sets like feel cool. Like you can tell, like they're not full with people. Like not there's scenes and stuff with like obviously random people in it, but mostly because the Civil War kind of works because towns are empty and stuff, so they probably just like cleared out the town, set it up and like whatever. But things are done very cleverly, and because it's a road trip movie, most of it's just set around four people in a car, do you know? So it's like
brilliant.
It's well,
I'm gonna
done.
Go. I presume I can't bring my 8-year-old, but I'm gonna go.
Yeah, probably not.
Okay, grand. Let's give it some black puddings.
I was given this a good thought. I would actually nearly go as far as say like an 8 or a 9, honestly. Like I just really, I don't know what it was. I really locked in with it. And also, so there's this whole thing that they're like, there's this conversation, like, if I died, would you like take a photo of it? Like, because they're such dedicated photographers. Mm. And I was like, I know it's supposed to be like, oh my God, these people are over dedicated to the work. But it made me think, yeah, if I died, I would want people to get content out of it, you know? So I was like, I found it really relatable. Yeah. Where it was supposed to be like how people are too over dedicated to themselves. Like, so.
8 or 9, which are you going for?
Do you know what? I'm feeling generous, Dav. I'm going to give it a 9.
Okay, good
I think it was a good movie.
9 Black Puddings out of 10. We're heading into just great movie time. The summer is always a great time.
Fall Guy is just the thing.
I actually cannot wait.
Yeah.
Cannot wait. And when I saw it, it brought back such memories. It must have been on repeats when I was a kid, because even the song and the name Cole Stevens or Stevens brings back such memories for me. So, and Ryan Gosling is a good choice.
Apart
from his weird cheeks these
days. I'm betting that it's going to be a 10.
Yeah, oh, totally. And have you seen the press stuff where he's standing with two stuntmen and they go flying back?
Did you see the carpool karaoke thing?
No. Still a thing, carpool karaoke.
I know. Well, they kind of, the whole thing is they don't think it's a thing, but they just, it's just fun.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. It's just one of those things where it's just pure cinema. So it's pure fun, like, you know.
Also, completely digressing from Civil War, Ryan Gosling needed something like this after Barbie. Because what do you do after something that was so massive like Barbie?
Yeah, well,
you do another iconic 80s show. The Fall Guy.
What's funny is about him, though, because we're realistically going to be talking about him when Fall Guy comes out anyway, so we'll just preemptively do a Ryan Gosling chat now, that because he was so good in Barbie, everyone started looking back at all his old movies and are like, he's so good in all of his movies.
He's brilliant.
Like, he's always plays a kind of a fool, but like, you love them. Like
charming fool.
Because everyone's been talking about Nice Guys and stuff lately, and it's such a good movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I went back and watched, like, some of the older stuff that I was like, you'd see clips from on TikTok and stuff. And I was like, what is this movie? And you watch it, and I was like, this is so real, actually. He's me. And then, like, even stuff like Crazy Stupid Love, La La Land.
That's it. Crazy Stupid Love. I'm actually on my phone looking for the name of that. That's one of my favourite movies.
The ending of Crazy Stupid Love is one of the best.
Twist galore.
Of all time.
Loved it. Brilliant. Let's go.
Yeah, we're so excited for Fall Guy.
I'll stick on a song.
Preemptively.
We'll go chat more.
Yeah, let's do it.
9 out of 10 for a Civil War, A24. You know it's going to be a good one. Thanks a million, Brian.
No problem at all.
The Sunday Grill on Beat 102-103.